Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hayward hits a high fly ball, deep right field. That goes Altair. It's got a chance. Grand slam. Grand slam, Jason Hayward. Cubs win the ball game.
This is about as loud as we've had Wrigley since, maybe 16 as a grand slam game winner. High heater ends up in the right field bleachers. Wow.
Jason Hayward being mobbed by his teammates. A game-winning grand slam. Cubs win it by a score of 7-5. What a finish.
Oh, my.
There you go. Tom Petty's running down a dream. And we really thought that was, what were the odds that we'd have that highlight played with Jason Hayward's
shocking
joining
us?
We're back at the Cubs convention. Jason Hayward joins us here. Mike Esposito, Steve Rosenblum. Cubs convention coverage sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. And that moment was part of the narrative that writers like me and radio guys get suckered into, go, oh, my God. So Ian Happ at the first pitch of the season for a home run. Jason Hayward hits a grand slam. David Bodie hits.
And walk-off grand slams everywhere, right?
Even more improbable. So I'm a sucker for that. Do players get caught up in that kind of narrative, that kind of, or is it, okay, that's the game we won, let's move along?
Honestly, I feel like everybody handles it differently. But walk-off at Wrigley Field, grand slam, you know, the whole scenario, bases loaded, two outs, two strikes, all of that down by two. You know, you live in that moment, absolutely. And the next day we got a game, but I wasn't in the starting lineup the next day, so I was just kind of, okay, like this happened. You know, sitting on the bench watching the game, staying tuned in, but, you know, people were still talking about it in the stands the next day. So it was just an awesome thing to be a part of that vibe and a part of the atmosphere at Wrigley.
So what is the vibe here? This is the third team you've gone. You had some kind of winter, some Cubs convention or Atlanta, whatever other fan fest in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Compare and contrast, because this is my first. The energy here is unbelievable.
This energy right here is unmatched for me when you're talking about doing a fan fest, about getting ready for spring training. And it just feels like in season again. It feels like you want to go play a game tomorrow. And
yeah, did you look outside?
Oh, yeah. But we kind of played in something like that last year. So
that's right.
But there were still fans there at the game. But it just makes it super awesome, man, for us to come together as players. And, you know, it just goes without saying, like, why we're here getting together, getting ready for another season, because we want to come back and play for fans like these.
Does it seem like, because this is what, year four of you being a Chicago Cub, I imagine by this point you're well settled in. I mean, certainly the group of guys is the same, very similar to the group of guys that you came in with. My guess is that is a good thing from a clubhouse perspective and a chemistry perspective.
Absolutely. You know, that's kind of what you hope for when you sign somewhere for long term. You want to be around the same group of guys for the most part. You want to have a chance to succeed, obviously a lot, but going to go through some failures as well with the group, but just hope it's consistent. We hope for consistency there, and that's what they've done here. They've created that environment for us with the players, and I know the coaching staff has, you know, had its, you know, changes, but they're trying to do the best they can to take care of this core group here, and it's been fun to be a part of.
Our guest is Jason Hayward, Cubs outfielder. And so you play right field, and then you hear some talk earlier about, well, there's Bryce Harper, they might sign him. Bryce Harper also plays right field. What goes through a player's mind when you hear, not now everybody said, blown it up and shot it down and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. What goes through a player's mind? What do you think when you hear some talk like that at your position?
As far as I'm concerned, it's my position, 5 gold gloves. but, you know, past that, you know, they're trying to do the best they can to help our roster.
Yeah.
Regardless of who it is they're talking about or if they're talking about taking people away, whatever it is, man, that's stuff you can't control as a player. And all you can do is go out there and put your best foot forward and try and do the best you can to help your team win. And I feel like I've done a pretty damn good job of doing that in right field for my career. So,
yeah, and defensively, you're obviously one of the elite defenders out there in right field, Gold Glove winner and whatnot. I'm curious your observations on Kyle Schwarber, because he's a guy who never played outfield before, has now been out there. I guess this is his second. I think his first experience in the outfield was in the playoffs back in 2016, which, as crazy as that seems, or 2015, excuse me. But as he's progressed and as he's matured and learned and worked hard, certainly, observationally, how does he look over there in left field, and how has he improved, in your mind, over there in left field since you've been over there?
To be a catcher and then to be asked to bat leadoff and then to be asked to play left field and to all that have all that happen at the big league level with a team that's expected to win a World Series every season, it goes without saying how difficult that is. And then to have the knee injury he had and then to miss a full season and then come back the next year and try and play outfield again, recovering from all that stuff, man. So all those variables to me make it that much harder to play outfield. But, Schwarby, he's made a lot of great throws. I feel like you guys saw last year, made a lot of great throws from the outfield. He hustles his tail off every time, and he's trying to get better out there just mentally, the whole mental approach. But I feel like, to me, he's got it. He's got it down pat. He's a great hard worker, and he makes sure he can do what he needs to do to get to every ball out there.
Talking with Jason Hayward, Cubs right fielder. He joins us on The Score. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito from the Cubs convention. So there's a question from an E-Channel reporter who wants to know about Rizzo's wedding. So any tidbits, any gossip? What was it like? He's not here. He's on his honeymoon because that's why he's missing the Cubs convention.
If anybody saw the videos from last night, Tony's wedding was beautiful, elegant, super classy. But for a Rizzo wedding, I was expecting a little bit more crazy, and it wasn't crazy. It was just a good time.
Really?
Simple good time. Cubs players, Cubs family. We do what we do. We have fun. We get after it together and celebrate each other's victories and all type of stuff like that. But it was just...
Was there a time where the players got on the dance floor and danced as if it were your disco Tony Rizzo in the victory room?
I don't want to say just the players, but I remember this one moment where there were all of us out there, basically, and then Tom Ricketts came through, and he hyped everybody up, and he showed some dance moves. So that was just...
Tom Ricketts?
Whoa, now
Tom
see, Ricketts. There's breaking news right there.
Tom Ricketts.
Did he break dance?
I don't know what you call it. I don't know what you call it, but I got to say, he did it really, really well, though.
Get down, get funky.
He got funky.
All right. Going back to what you talked about, the vibe here, and I remember, and Kerry Wood was talking about it, Kerry Wood hits a home run against the Marlins, and it was the fateful Game 7.
It was the Marlins, yes.
And he said, forget the ending, the way that 2003 ended. Yeah. He said, but he's rounding the bases, and he's watching what's going on in the outfield, in the bleachers. And people are going nuts. Beer is flying everywhere. And this is like the fifth inning when he hit the home run, and there were still things to be decided. So compare and contrast that with, were you looking in the bleachers when you hit that grand slam? Because that was momentous for a lot of reasons. I don't know what you saw as you were rounding the bases.
For me, I just kind of took that moment in a little bit and just saw everything. Saw my coaches, saw my teammates, saw the fans, looked at Wrigley for a little bit, But it was just all around. Obviously, we won that game and an exciting finish, but it was just an epic moment for me in sports just to watch, a city, Chicago, at Wrigley, go that crazy over
exploded.
A win. And,
exploded.
The way that whole inning started for us to come back and win that game that way, just awesome.
Now, you're a veteran guy. You've been around the big leagues for a number of years now. Is your off-season routine, is it something that you change from year to year depending on whatever the circumstances are, or do you have a plan that you tend to stick to from offseason to offseason that works for you?
Honestly, it's all about, what season, how the season goes, how your body feels, how late you play into the year. For me, but it's kind of easy just to plan out what it is I want based off of that stuff. This year I was in Chicago a lot, working out at Wrigley early on up until like Thanksgiving. Then I went to Atlanta this year instead of Arizona, hung out with my parents, my brother, and worked out there and was able to take care of my body a little bit more. with you know, some physical therapists and things like that. And I'll be out in Arizona like February 2nd.
So you got to get out of this. We know that.
Yeah, eventually. But
can you take us with you?
That's
you
right.
Can come. You're welcome to come.
We'll take some swings.
But it's super nice to be able to work out of the facility here and kind of hibernate in this city and also enjoy what it has to bring throughout the holiday time.
Jason Hayward with us on The Score. You know, last year was we read a lot about the intense and early work you did on your swing over the winter. It sounds much different than what you're describing now. So there was a lot of work. Compare and contrast, and how satisfied were you with the work you put in the off season as you went through 2018?
Honestly, I did a little bit less in 2018 swing-wise. It was just more mentality, man. Just get back to being myself and not trying to do too much. Use my hands at the plate, be athletic, and just take what the game gives me there. And that showed up a lot. There were a lot of big hits, a lot of key hits for us in key situations that I was obviously happy to come through, but just letting the game come to me and not letting the moment get too big. And now also knowing what to expect and how I'm going to be used, you know, in the lineup, out of the lineup, pinch hitting, things like that. You know, I feel like those are things that people don't understand that go into all of our mindsets as we try and prepare for our day as players. And we got a group of guys that most of us use to playing every day, especially myself. So it was just an all-around just kind of comfort thing for me going into 2018. And now I feel like I'm, you know, ready to go.
You mentioned the coaching staff changes. So Chili Davis has moved on, new hitting coach, Iaposte is in. Do you have a relationship with him? Is that a big deal in your mind, hitting coach versus, I mean, Joe Maddon's obviously still there. It's still, you know, his team. He's running the clubhouse. It's your guys' clubhouse. Different coaches come and go over time. How much does that affect what you guys do on a day-to-day basis?
Well, man, it's a tough part of the business because you build relationships with people and you have people in your corner fighting for you. As players every day, especially your hitting coaches, man, that's like our second coach.
Yep.
For us, we spend a lot of time with them. But I would say it's probably going to be a little tougher as a younger player when you have changes like that. I went through that in Atlanta and then moving on to another team with St. Louis. And then here, obviously, we're talking about now having a few different hitting coaches. But for me personally, I know I got to do what I can every day, and I got to know what to expect out of myself and know what I'm looking for to feel. But like I was saying, like some of these younger guys, for them, while they're trying to build that and figure out what that is and what that looks like for themselves, it could probably be a little bit tougher.
Jason Hayward is our guest on The Score. We're broadcasting from the Cubs convention. The way Theo Epstein described it at the end of the season, the offense broke. It was his word, broke. Need to get it fixed. How did the players describe it as you wound down that season, or maybe now you've had several months to step back and look at it? What do you think?
I feel like disappointment goes without saying, because any year we don't win a World Series, we honestly feel disappointed. That's how much we care about the city. That's how much we care about, you know, how much the organization does for us and how much they meet us halfway. But at the end of the day, man, it's a part of a learning curve. You know, it's a part of other teams got that much better. Other teams made some adjustments, and you know, we went out there and fought our tails off. And we had that schedule that we had at the end of the year, 42 games out of 43 days or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Pitching staff, you know, early on, I mean, like we talked about last night, man, our bullpen was our backbone, and, you know, that's only going to last you but so long. Starting pitchers, I mean, those guys, they locked it in, you know, second half. But it was just timing was a little off for that. And I feel like if we had some more season to play, I feel like some things could have turned around, but we didn't make it that far.
As you look at the division, too, Milwaukee obviously had a great last season. Mm-hmm. St. Louis has made some moves in the offseason. This is looking like, if not the strongest division in baseball, one of them for certain, and you guys are going to have your challenges ahead of you there in the Central.
Absolutely. For me, I feel like I see this division get better every year in the NL Central. Pittsburgh Pirates won 11 games last year in a row, didn't make the postseason. Cincinnati Reds, they come play us in September here at Wrigley, and their whole starting lineup, yeah, everybody batting 300. Leadoff hitter for them had 14 home runs. So you're talking about that kind of talent, that kind of competition you're playing against on teams that aren't even expecting to go to the postseason on a nightly basis. So you got to bring your A game, and those few series that, you know, can make or break you during the year when you're playing against teams in your division go a long way.
Well, the Cardinals got Paul Goldschmidt. Mm-hmm. So And I just figure you guys now get Chris Bryant in a trade with a doctor. That they made him all better, because if they're the same kind of guy, they're regular MVP, they're perennial MVP candidates. He makes a huge difference. You really didn't have Chris Bryant at all, and you won 95 games. Now, the offense breaking at the end, it's a huge difference. Do you ever play what if with something like that?
I don't really play what ifs in our area and from our perspective, because you play what if, you're going to be disappointed a lot.
Yes.
I feel like.
And you already are in baseball.
There you go. But, no, absolutely, you know, that's super fair with KB. Because, you know, going through injuries, you know, going through the league, adjusting to him. But the biggest thing is, you know, I've had a shoulder injury in my career, and you're not able to feel like you can go up there to the plate and make those adjustments on a daily basis because you got something nagging you. That's a tough thing to deal with. But like you're saying, getting KB back and having him feel healthy and feel good, there's definitely going to be a lot to be said about the difference that he makes on a daily basis for us.
Wonderful blue eyes. Okay, before I let you go, we were told to ask – as you tried to help out your general manager last night,
okay,
with a bit of sartorial inefficiency on his part, can you share with the class what happened?
So, you know, Theo and Jed are up on the stage with Demp doing their interview, doing the comedy show. It's great. And then
this is during the Ryan Dempster portion of it,
during,
right?
During the late show.
And Theo's up the late show.
And of course, you got the big screens up there for people in the stands to see, and we're kind of keeping track over there on the side. And then I noticed that you can see the cord where they got Theo's mic laced through his jersey or through his dress shirt. But then you start seeing some belly poke through. You start seeing some hair poke through, and I'm just like, okay, this isn't good, but I think it's going to go away. And it never went away. And to make it worse, the camera kept just kind of gradually zooming in and zooming in. And I'm like, hey, like, somebody's got to go say something to him. Like, somebody say something to him, let him know. I try and call him. Of course, he's not going to answer his phone, but his phone was actually sitting right next to me. And then somebody was like, hey, just go up there. I was like, in the middle of the show, they're like, just go up there and tell him. So I just had to go let him know.
And now, true friend right there.
What did you say? Yeah, he needed a friend and he got one. That's a way to bail out a teammate. What did you say?
I just said, hey, you guys are doing great right now, but Theo, I got to let you know about your shirt, man. And when he got over there, he made sure that I didn't have any video footage of it, that no one sent anything to me. Like, he literally took my phone from me, and then, like, he didn't realize he closed it. He was like, here, open it with your face right now. Open it. I'm about to delete this video. And at the end of the day, he was like, I appreciate you, man. I can't believe nobody else came up there and helped me out. He's like, good teammate.
That's it. You are. He's Jason Hayward. Thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely.
Jason. We appreciate
you,
Jason.
Appreciate
your time.
Thank you, guys.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. More from the Cubs convention. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito, broadcasting live from the Cubs convention, the Sheraton Grand. It'll run through tomorrow. The Cubs convention coverage is sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. While you're at the Cubs convention, stop by Lizzie McNeil's Irish Pub next door. It's next door to the Sheraton for Tito's specials all weekend long. And we're welcoming in our Hall of Famer, Ryan Sandberg. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show. Here, we'll give you a microphone.
Sure.
Look at that, just like in
radio.
How you guys doing?
You're doing good.
Doing
How about you?
Hanging in there.
All right, so you've been, Ryan Sandberg joins us on The Score, and you've been to any number of Cubs conventions in different configurations. So this seems like such a buzz to me. It's not even the year after they won the World Series. It might have been the year after one of the most disappointing things. Compare and contrast the Cubs conventions you've been to, yeah, the energy, the...
I would say the first one that they had, I believe it was in 85.
It was, yep.
So it was right after the 84 season, 85.
Yeah, what happened in the 84 season?
Pretty good stuff.
Were there
pretty
some hardware? Stuff.
There was some hardware. Yeah, a lot of good stuff, and I think that was the thing that invented this thing, was the 84 team and the 84 season. Fans chomping at the bit for 85 to start, see if we could do it again, and then the Cubs convention. It was a big deal. There was a lot of excitement about that, but I would say the last 4 years, I would say tops that. 16, yeah. 17, 18, 19. For obvious reasons, what the possibilities are on the field, and really, that's where it all starts. That's where excitement starts. Is what can happen this year, once again, the Cubs are going to have a great roster. They need to stay healthy this year, coming off a 95-win season, which is good. But I think there's a lot more there that can happen with some good health.
Well, and you mentioned too the stretch of great seasons the Cubs have had recently, probably the best four-year stretch of Cubs baseball record-wise since the 100 years ago, back during the early days of baseball. As you see this team, and you mentioned health, certainly that's got to be the biggest part of it. In your mind, is it starting rotation health? Is it Chris Bryant's shoulder being back to normal?
I'd say all the pieces. I think that's what we saw. I mean, they didn't have Chris Bryant for about 2 months. They didn't have a closer for half a season. Starting pitchers, a couple starting pitching. So I think it's all those pieces. And when you put it all together, it looks very good on paper, I think. So when you look at the possibilities of the rotation, very strong. Get the closer role in line, and then everybody lines up in the bullpen, I would say. And then the starting lineup has been terrific for 4 years. So the defense is good, the base running. So, yeah, I would say all the parts, very important. And they can't afford to lose a guy. They have great guys coming off the bench, which is very strong. I think that's been one of their pluses the last 4 years, is their extra guys. There's really no step-off when they're in the lineup, and some of the regulars get the days off, and they still win games. So I think it'll take all 25 guys and maybe 30 to 32, 35 guys to get through the season. That usually is the case. They'll need some help from the minor leagues. And what we've seen the last few years is strong guys come up from the minor leagues and chip right in and win games and become heroes. David Bode last year, I mean, off the charts. I mean, he was here a week, and all of a sudden they're selling his jerseys in the concessions. And he hit a couple of balls, and, I mean, that's what it takes. But they've had those contributions from the minor leagues, and that's all big.
I wanted to live David Bode's life most of last summer. Of course, that Grand Slam might have been the last time the Cubs got a clutch hit that they needed. And when you see players going through that, when you see a team going through that, Theo said the offense broke. What did it look like to you? What was happening? What were they doing at the
plate?
Yeah,
they just, they just weren't. It was really hard to tell what the concept was and what the game plan was. And there was really no adjustments throughout the game. If a pitcher was on in the first inning, opposing pitcher, I mean, it just seemed like nothing changed. The at-bats didn't change. The approach didn't change. Javi Baez, I would say, an exception, where he blossomed and really matured as a hitter. Great to see him. He was really the whole offense for at least the first half of the season. So I expect more from him. Anthony Rizzo came on strong, but a healthy Chris Bryant in there. The teams that I was on as teammates and with the coaches, we had a concept. We had a game plan that day, how we're going to face this pitcher. The hitters would go up there and try those things, and sometimes it varied day to day on who we were pitching, what the approach was, whether we had to work the opposite field, make them come back to our pull side or whatever, sit on the changeup because you're going to get it. Whatever it might be, we talked about it, and we had discipline to now take it into the game. It just seemed to be a lack of adjustment throughout the game, and if a pitcher was on, there was no adjustment up there to what the pitcher was being effective with.
Ryan Sandberg, our guest, Baseball Hall of Famer, and other Hall of Famers, too, right down the hall signing autographs, too. Lee Smith, a new member of the Hall.
Love that.
I was just going to ask you, it's a long time coming for Lee Smith.
Yeah, I've been campaigning for him for a number of years, especially at the Cubs convention, but also at the Hall of Fame. For me, I think just the Hall of Fame itself was backed up in the closer role and getting the guys in. And, it took the Eckersleys to get in, the Raleigh Fingers, Trevor Hoffman. But Lee Smith, at the time of his retirement, we know was the all-time saves leader. So it's just a matter of time. But like anything else in baseball, the Hall of Fame is not perfect. They've had to catch up probably since day one in 1939 when they put five guys in. And those five guys were covering the 30 or 40 years before that.
Sure.
And so they've been behind ever since. Mm-hmm. I think that was the case with Lee Smith. And a great teammate, a big part of the 84 season. But I really liked when he did his nice little slow jog in from the bullpen coming in there, especially the 3 o'clock starts where he was coming in at 6 o'clock and nobody could see the ball. Even the infielders. So it was always a great thing to have a lead with Lee Smith coming in at Wrigley Field.
Ryan Saber joins us from the Cubs convention on The Score. Speaking of 84, Bob Costas left NBC, and I couldn't help but think of you. He left NBC. That was such a And trying to explain to kids today.
Kids these days.
That was, first of all, it was the game of the week, which has no meaning.
And there was the backup game. The main game was rained out, so he was the backup.
I forgot about that.
Him and Tony Kubek were the backup. So it took a rain out somewhere else to not have Joe Garagiola and
Vince Scully or
maybe
Tony
Vince
Kubek?
Scully. Kubek. Vince Scully, I think, had the main game back then. We got word of it before the first pitch that we were the game of the world, which we called it. But it happened to be the backup game. But Bob Costas, even today, thanks me for that game. He was just starting out announcing baseball games. For him and myself, it was a breakout day, and our careers kind of went upwards after that.
Yeah, I can't. You don't have to leave the Cubs just because he's leaving NBC, right?
I'm good.
Stay with the organization.
Yeah, I'll stay with the organization.
That's good. Can I ask you about the adjustments? When you're watching players not make adjustments, you're talking about discipline. This Cubs team had a reputation for discipline at the plate. They worked pitchers. They worked pitcher staff. So did that change from what you saw?
Well, for the most part, there's times where you want to work the count and work the pitcher. There's other times where it's the second or third or fourth time around the batting order, and now it's middle of the game. You've already seen what the pitcher has, and there's guys on base. Now you don't necessarily want to work the count and have a deep count, get down to two strikes on you where you get something tough to hit. Now you want to go up there and be the guy that drives the ball right away, and I was notorious for starting the game by taking the first pitch that I saw, unless I just saw the pitcher last week. It was different, but I just wanted to see four or five pitches at least my first at bat, and then go up there and with the rest of the game, whatever the game dictated, if there's men on base, I was up there to hit right away because I knew what he had. If there's nobody on, same thing if I knew a pitch that I'd get. But it was just an educated guess and some thought into my at-bats, depending if it was my first at-bat or my third or my fourth at-bat, depending on the game. So those were just adjustments that I would make, and oftentimes it almost felt like I was setting the pitcher up for that moment where I could now go up there and sit on the first pitch. I know what his fastball's doing. I know the velocity that day. Now I want to do some damage with it, with some men on base, and kind of catch him off guard.
It's fascinating to hear you talk about that stuff, because you're doing this in the pre-data era, whatever you want to call it, right? You didn't have iPads sitting there in the dugout. I mean, this is stuff you're doing.
That's
all
right.
Your homework on your own ahead of time, right?
Yeah, with teammates. The Gary Matthews, the Bill Buckners, the Andre Dawsons, whoever, Mark Graces. We talked about who was pitching that day just on our own around our locker. There was no formal meeting. There was no stack of 55 pages of paper to look at. We just talked about, hey, we saw this guy 2 weeks ago, this is what he did, and so we kind of share that through batting practice, and we'd actually take our batting practice according to who was pitching that day. If it was a soft-throwing guy, we'd actually sit back on the ball and try and work the other way, and we didn't take batting practice the same way if we were facing Tom Glavin or Nolan Ryan. Nolan Ryan, we'd ask for a little bit more on the ball, maybe move the screen up a little bit closer and emulate what we're going to see that day. If we're facing a guy like Tom Glavin, we just work the other way and ask for some pitches away so we can wait on the baseball and take batting practice accordingly. But we all did that as players. We didn't have to have a coach tell us to do that. And that's the way that we were brought up in the minor leagues, was to be our own coach, because they didn't have all those coaches at the minor league level.
Right.
You had a manager, you had a pitching coach. The hitting coach you'd see once or twice a season. They just come in and check in, see how you were doing. The infield coach would rove around. You'd see him once a month. So we became to be our own coaches. And so for me in the box, that's what I felt on the on-deck circle. First of all, driving to the ballpark, Actually, going to bed. Let me go back even further. Going to bed, I knew who was pitching the next day, and I would have at-bats go through my mind before I'd fall asleep on facing that guy last year, 2 years ago, last week, last month. Wake up, okay, this guy's pitching once again. Get to the ballpark. If it's at Wrigley Field, driving down the expressway, check the flags, see which way the flags are blowing.
Right.
To see if I got to stay on top of the baseball because it's blowing in 30 miles an hour, or if it's blowing out, I'm actually going to not miss my pitch, swing a little easier, and just let the wind carry the ball. So I think about that and then talk to the teammates, have batting practice, and be ready to go for the game.
Wow, you know, who needs a coach? You do all that. You don't want to talk to coaches anyways. You just leave them. Go ahead, leave me alone.
And the video thing, the video. We had some early video. It was VHS, which was not side angles.
Reggie Vision.
Yeah,
Reggie was selling it. Reggie Jackson. It was Reggie Vision.
Yeah, every now and then we get a camera at center field, at Wrigley Field, and get the pitch coming in. But I just looked to see what the pitches were doing, what his movement on his pitches were. That's all I looked for. I wasn't really studying myself. Where's my hands? Where's my feet? What am I? I just want to know what the pitch was doing. I was telling the story yesterday. I was, I believe it was 1991. This is the type of help I got from my coach as a manager on hitting. Went into Don Zimmer's room, manager's office. I think I was hitting about 245. I just walked in there and said, "Zim, I'm just not where I want to be offensively. You've been around me a few years. Do you see anything?" He goes, he just thought about it for about 2 seconds, and Zim said, "Rhino, tonight I want you to go up there, see the ball, and whack it." I said, "Okay." I turned and walked out, and that was the hitting tip of the game.
Yeah. Hard-hitting analysis from Zim there.
But what he's saying, see the ball, very important. See the ball.
See the ball.
That means it's going to be a strike. See the ball and whack it. That was it. Nothing more than that. Not, your hands are a little, you're half an inch too high. Your stride might be a quarter of an inch. It was nothing about, he knew I could hit. He just knew that I needed to get a base hit. And the most important thing is to see the baseball and put the bat on the ball.
It's
really
pretty compelling stuff.
Yeah. And you know what? I hit a double off the left field wall in Montreal, where it was a tough place to hit. Had two hits that game and then went on and caught fire after that.
So it worked.
It worked, yeah.
Good advice from Zim then.
Which pitcher owned you, Ryan Sandberg?
Well, I'm a Hall of Famer, so none did.
That's the best answer.
That's what I tell my grandkids anyway.
There you go.
You know, when you're a Hall of Famer and then years go by, as the years go by, the lies kind of get a little bit bigger but everything. But honestly, the one guy that really got my attention, I talked about going to bed, who's pitching tomorrow, Nolan Ryan. We would actually check the rotation of the Astros about 10 days in advance to see if we're going to see Nolan in the Astrodome.
Really?
See the lighting in this hallway right here? This was the lighting of the Astrodome.
That's right.
It wasn't any better than this. Yellow lights, dark, and here's Nolan out there back in the – he was actually throwing 105, 106 miles an hour. It wasn't 100, but the new technology proves it was 105. He would keep that for 8 innings. He'd buzz a couple – hitters up and in under the chin just to let the whole lineup know that, hey, don't be digging in. If there was a rookie in the lineup, he probably got one in the middle of the back just because he was a rookie. And he had a curveball that started about 2 feet behind my head to be a strike. He had to hang in there on that. Other than that, everybody else was kind of ordinary. But it varied year to year who I had difficulties with. And what happened was if one guy owned me 1 year, the next year I would think about that, I'd make the adjustment, and I would do whatever I could to at least get some hits off of that guy, which usually turned into doing much better against that pitcher.
Ryan, appreciate you stopping by. Thank you
very much
for your
time.
My pleasure.
Hall of Famer Ryan Sandberg. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito. We'll be back for more from the Cubs convention on The Score. Welcome back. Welcome in. Welcome to the Cubs convention on The Score. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito. We are broadcasting live from the Sheraton Grand.
Cubs convention coverage is sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. While at the Cubs convention, stop by Lizzie McNeil's Irish Pub next door to the Sheraton for Tito's specials all weekend long. Top of the hour, we will welcome a future Hall of Famer, Pat Hughes, Cubs radio play-by-play man. At the end of next hour, we will transition with Julie DeCaro and Maggie Hendricks. Maggie is here.
They're in the building.
Trying to control, trying not to have a panic attack, learning to breathe because Jody Davis might be in the building.
Childhood crush, Jody Davis,
right.
is here, everybody.
And I understand that because Allie has, my daughter has, two secret boyfriends on this Cubs team.
The current team.
Yeah.
I remember, I believe Wilson Contreras is one, I believe,
Wilson
right?
Contreras.
Contreras, yes.
And Javi Baez are her secret boyfriends.
Okay.
And by the way, it was her question, her wanting to know, the E-Channel reporter that she is, ask Jason Hayward what Tony Rizzo's wedding was like.
Mm-hmm.
And what did we get out of that? We got Tom Ricketts getting down and getting funky. Let's imagine that.
He's a dancing machine, that Tom Ricketts.
What do you think that looked like? What do you imagine? What was Tom
Ricketts doing?
I have some
guesses, but I'm going to guess. I'm going to guess it wasn't very graceful, but I'm going to guess it was full of effort, and I'm going to guess it was much appreciated by the players on the team.
Jason Hayward, our guest earlier, seemed to appreciate it.
I did get a chuckle when he said, I'm not sure what that was. It was something, though. They did get something.
So where are you on the Cubs' idea of leadoff man by default?
I'm a traditionalist in that I liked having Dexter Fowler lead off every day. I liked having Bobby Dernier lead off every day, right? I mean, that's just how I was taught the game, and that's how I came up playing baseball and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I get now when they say, and Len mentioned it, forget who it is, forget everything else. How often is that leadoff slot getting on base? If it's 360 or above, that's good. I understand that. I have a hard time separating myself from, you know, my old biases towards, hey, I want a leadoff hitter. So I'm good. The experts will tell me that as long as I'm getting on base 36% of the time or more from the leadoff spot, that mm-hmm. I'm good. I do like Ian Happ. I expect him to have a better season. I do like leadoff man extraordinaire Anthony Rizzo. If it comes to that, whoever you put up there, I have confidence that there will be a good leadoff man.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt a whole lot more comfy and wonderful when Dexter Fowler was leading off for me.
Yeah, World Series bias has something
it
to
does.
Do with
I'm
it.
I'm sure it does.
Especially when the guy is the only player to lead off Game 7 of a World Series with a home
with
run.
A home run.
And when you saw what that... Now you can't attribute the fact they didn't win after that to him, to not having him. But it was something that alleviated... Schwarber felt the pressure.
There's no doubt.
Happ felt the pressure. Despite that first pitch.
Which was one run
on opening day, yeah. And you thought you had something there. And one of the things that we talked about with Jason Hayward was if Bryce Harper had come here, let's say he had been the guy, and it could have been him or Machado, you could have had Disco Tony Rizzo as your leadoff hitter. If you add that other bat.
Mookie Betts leads off. He's pretty good.
Well, but you could have done that. And in Rizzo's world, he's the world's greatest leadoff hitter. Is that what he told us?
Yeah. Well, and we know. I mean, it is a lot of this, so much of this, if we learned anything from talking to these guys, so much of this is just mental. I mean, we talked to Jason Hayward and guys adjusting to coming in with the big contracts and the high expectations. We saw last year Tyler Chatwood get in his own head and couldn't get out of it. And now we're hearing, and we'll see how year two looks, but we're hearing from the new pitching coach last night, hey, Chatwood's looking good. He straightened himself out a little bit. He's getting back to the basics. So we'll see how that works. I mean, so much of this whole thing is mental. So if fixing leadoff means putting Anthony Rizzo up there to loosen everyone up for a few days and having him be able to do it, I'm all for it. We've seen over the years, Joe will certainly do that. We know that.
I haven't looked at the schedule other than I know they open in Texas. If I'm the Cubs, I have Chatwood and Darvish healthy enough to be in the starting rotation, I want them starting on the road. I want their first starts of 2019 to be road starts, especially Chatwood.
Because they picked up Hamels' option, and because they have, you know, Quintana, Hendricks, Lester, I mean, everyone else is back, including Darvish, assuming health through spring training, Chatwood does not break camp in that rotation.
True.
Unless someone's hurt.
True.
But as we also know, and I believe it was...
someone gets hurt.
Right. It always happens. It was Len Casper when he sat in our chair here an hour ago. You know you're going to use 35 or 40 guys throughout the course of the season. You know plenty of them are going to be starting pitchers. So they have that depth. But then what do you do? Do you start Chatwood in long relief? Do you start Chatwood in the minor leagues? Well, I mean, how do you... You're paying him. Where do you, if he's not in the rotation, where do you put him?
I'm fine with long relief. If everybody else is healthy, he's not one of the five best pitchers.
Right, and how many times did we see Mike Montgomery start last year? A lot, right? And he was long relief when the season started.
Because Chatwood was bad and guys weren't healthy, and you needed him to be able to do that. And that's yet another question of a guy you have to find a place for. And if your rotation is so good that Mike Montgomery can't be in it, that's good. As a Cub fan, you got to like that.
Right. Assuming health, and again, you can't assume health, but assuming the five guys are healthy to start the season, Chatwood and Montgomery then bounce to the bullpen.
I'm assuming health because I'm assuming the Cubs, last year's Cubs team is going to win this year's World Series. That's the way I look at it, with guys who are healthy. Darvish is going to be healthy, and Bryant's going to be healthy, and that's what you need. That's it. We're going to take a break.
All right.
And do you have the schedule?
Yeah, I'm just gonna, the first nine games are on the road, at Texas, at Atlanta, at Milwaukee, before opening the home schedule Monday, April 8th against the Pirates.
Milwaukee's going to be like a home series, so they only have two.
Six road games, three neutral site games, we'll call them, at Miller Park, and then they come to Wrigley Field for the home opener.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Pat Hughes, Cubs radio broadcaster. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.